I'm just gonna loop that now. That's perfect because I don't have to find it.
That's great.
That was my favorite one from back in the day.
Dylan will message me like, McBain gets to do them now.
That was good too, because I didn't know you did that for like a while. And Dylan, my friend Dylan would message me and he'd be like, Tombstalker. And I was like, yeah, Tombstalker's cool.
Good car, cool car, Dylan.
Yeah.
Turn one, once upon a time. You know I'm trying to find a hollow one to play in. Cast a burning inquiry. If I had a 7-2 key, now throw your hands away. Gonna crack the lines of diamond making red. Gonna hit you with blue wallets till you're dead. Kitchen in swings in with haste. Bring Benjamins back to win the race. He's on Jay's ravager to try more cards now. And if you think you can wait, I'll give my creatures haste to attack you. Say goodbye. Cast Fateless First Mate, but don't discard in anger, I heard you say.
Hello and welcome to the Cajun Threshold, the Legacy Podcast. It's saying, I mean, like, if they're really quote-unquote god accounts, then can we just make the bans ourselves? Right. My name is Quinomori. Thank you. I'm here as always with my above average co-host, Jeff. Ooh, Kinsey.
That was a perfect time to actually pass it to McBain.
I was gonna dagger McBain after, but now it's too awkward. But we're also here with Brendan McBain, as always.
Below average. Thank you.
Below average in comparison to the other painter players on the Canadian Threshold in the year 2021, but below everything else, average, I'd say above average.
Below average podcast attendance.
That too.
Lowest storm count on the Canadian Threshold.
Does have threshold, though. He's making 5 mana, but he has no action spells.
That's a good start to a song.
Wow. Yeah. Well, really awkward intro. Why don't we clean it up a bit?
Housekeeping. Eternal Weekend is happening. Oh boy. God accounts where we can't make our own bands. November 15th to December 1st. These dates, I'm going to reiterate for my own sake, because mentally I thought these were a week earlier. Wasteland event, Friday, November 19th at 5 p.m. Pacific. Bayou event, Saturday, November 20th at 2 a.m. Pacific. Not going to hit that one. Sylvan Library event, Sunday, November 21st at 10 a.m. And then Vintage the week after, the same times. Of these, when I thought it was the week before, I was happily going to hit the Friday, and then I had plans on the Sunday. Now that it's the week that it actually is, it didn't change. My perspective of it did. I'm flipped. I can no longer play on the Friday, but I'm definitely going to jam the hell out of the Sunday.
Remember to actually register for the event well ahead of time.
Ooh,
or else your storm count will be zero. And you will not play. And you will have to go back to playing with your children.
Yep. Buy your tickets early. Register in Magic Online in the client early. Let it run for a fucking day and just sit in that queue.
Yeah, that is the play. And then when you boot up your computer, you'll get a Windows update and you'll have to like reinstall something and you'll get a game unlocked. But other than that... It'll be fantastic.
That made me think, oh shit, I haven't registered for Legacy in paper locally this Thursday. And then I just brought up the Stronghold website and there's one spot that's been filled. So we're fine. Everything.
When you said one spot, I got so fucking upset for a second.
No offense, but if there's one spot, I would have been like, hi, I just took the last spot, not told you there's one spot. And then I could hear you type in on your, you know, clacky mechanical keyboard. And I'm like, no, he's going faster than me.
So I'm definitely eyeing up the Friday and Sunday, as I think most Pacific time people are. Quinn, you're probably doing the Friday. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually got invited to a baby shower on the Sunday. And I was like, Liz, I don't know if I'm going to this baby shower. She's like, why? I'm like, I took the whole week off before to like prep to play Magic. And she's like, normally I would give you a hard time, but you took the whole week off. And I'm like, okay, but they might not do bands. And if they don't do bands, foreshadowing, I'm going to go to the baby shower on Sunday, I think.
So you're saying you're a baby.
I mean, like, it was already like, I was like, like, I can't tell them what I'm actually doing. I'm like, I can't make it. Like, I'm playing Magic. I'd be like, sorry, I have an appointment.
You know? I'm busy.
It's like you're having a child. You invite, there's also not that many people coming because it's COVID too. Like, the invite list is like
exclusive. It's
large, but I'm like looking at it, I'm like, all these people are out of town. Like, there's like actually like 12 people who are realistically going to show up to this thing. And I'm like, from like the inner circle, you know?
Wow.
So I was already feeling kind of guilty about it. And I'm like, wish we can get into more of a one later. But I was like, I'll play the Friday probably.
Also of note, the Mercadia Masks Block Constructed event currently is scheduled for November 5th, this Friday. So by the time you hear this, register right away, or maybe it's too late. Also, that date might change, though. It hasn't been confirmed. They haven't asked for decklists again. I just asked them on Twitter if they can confirm the date, because I want to play in this disaster, and it's going to be fun.
I can't believe Port is banned. Like, why? What's the idea there?
Right, like, what, are you going to make it worse?
No one wants to play getting ported down every single round.
No, you shut each other. You shut your mouth, Quinn. This is what we're here for. And we're here for, like, when you get mana screwed, you get really mana screwed.
Like, imagine if you could play, like, four Mind Twists in Old School, and you're, like, there's just some format that was allowed. Like, would that be okay?
But with this one in particular, nobody's playing Mercadian Masks Block Constructed because they think it's a fun, interesting time.
Exactly.
Like, it's, you're doing it because you know it's going to be shitty. Just go all the way.
I mean, speaking of time, maybe they just don't want to go to time.
It's Magic online.
I guess.
Magic space online.
I think with Rishadenport unbanned, like, just full on, just do whatever you want. Play amongst yourselves. That's like leaving carfentanil out on the street and just like, you know, whatever happens, happens. Like, someone's going to probably die, but...
Yeah, like,
I think we should, when we're done this, Jeff, we should probably review your deck list, because I'm not like an expert or anything, but like reviewing our discussion last time with Jeremy, again, thank you, Jeremy, for coming on. That was fantastic. But it definitely got the juices flowing, and I think we can like metagame this out here.
You want to try? It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Because they had the deck list showing on MTG Melee when it was supposed to happen before, because most everybody submitted. And like, there was actually a really surprising amount of people on the Contrarians deck that I was trying to play, which is Rising Waters, to the point where I think it was actually outnumbering Rebels. There was one really interesting looking deck that was like blue-white control that seemed to be set to like hate on both, which also played a card that I did not know existed in Masks. I thought it was just from Commander. It's like, it was like Wave of Reckoning or something. It's like each creature deals damage to itself equal to its power. It's like a Wrath kind of.
Is it like 3/3 white or something?
Something like that.
Stupid.
And like, I just looking at it, I was like, this idiot put Commander cards in their deck list. And it's like, oh no, I am wrong.
No, I have this card, a Masks version, because I had that like terrible Walls Commander deck. And I was like, oh, there's a Commander version. Like, oh, I knew it from the from Commander. And I'm like, oh, there's a Masks version. Because like you play a bunch of Walls and then all your opponents play good creatures and then you wipe away their good creatures and you just still have Walls. But
and then you can attack in for lethal, right?
Not, if everything goes well, which it never really seemed to with that deck.
Oh, is this the Arcades?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My attacking for lethal joke was supposed to be a joke, but no, your Walls can attack. I am interested in going through this with you, McBain, beforehand, and also doing a post-mortem after it happens. See if my choice of Ribbon Snake is actually the tech.
I recently listened to, I know it's like a big thing right now, everyone's doing it, but the Resleevables podcast,
mm-hmm.
and they covered Prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
And like, I remember playing Prophecy. My brother bought his first box of Magic cards, and it was Prophecy. I remember shredding all those packs, like sitting in our basement and looking at like Avatar of Woe and everything and be like, this is incredible. This is like, we're going to just crush everyone. This is before we had really like played any big tournaments and stuff like that. Anyway, or no, that would have been well after the fact, but we were still very excited about these cards and they were kind of chatting through all the stuff. And then Patrick was just, he's like, yeah, Troublesome Spirit was like the bee's knees. It was the best card. Like everyone wanted Troublesome Spirit. It was just above rate. It was a good card. And it was not what you would expect when you would like review this set. And I still have my Troublesome Spirits.
What is it like? Is that like a 2 blue for like a 3/4 flyer, 3/3 yeah. flyer? And at the end of your turn, you tap all your lands?
3/4 flyer.
3/4 for 4. That's just good.
Isn't Phantom Monster just like strictly snake, better than this card?
No, your Ribbon Snake is like a 2/3 that has to try to fly. Or is it flying or you lose flying?
Anybody can pay 2 and it loses flying.
Okay, yeah. So, but it's still a 2/3. So for one more, you're just like 3/4. That's,
well, those are in the board. Those are for the big matchup.
No, you just go from having like Time Walk to like Alrun's Epiphany, which is apparently a problem still, which I mean, we can get into the nuance of why that might be, you know, like the spells got so bad, whereas like the creatures, it was like this is like seems like a strict downgrade on Phantom Monster, and then all of a sudden they got to like the point now where it's like Uro.
Dude, this can block Phantom Monster all day.
Yeah, it's
nice
more
try
of
a, getting
it's,
in.
It's more of a, if yeah, Quinn, if we really want it to be nitpicky here, it's more of a downgrade on Serendip Free. You're just adding a blue to it, and instead of taking damage, you're tapping your mana.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I would just summarize it as Urza's Block is probably like the quintessential summary for everything that came after Urza's Block for a year. But we're not here for that. We're going to do that after. But Jeff, do you have any final items before we move on to our topic for the week?
Only the regular one that brings me great joy to announce every time. Magic Stronghold Weekly, 7 p.m. on Thursdays, pre-reg only, 4 rounds, hot Legacy action. 3 of us there to pack war you. Let's go.
I've really been enjoying it.
I've only been able to go once so far, and God, it's so fucking good. It's just so good.
You know what wasn't good? Me playing against you in a D&T mirror.
That was beautiful. I love that we both ended up on the Jason Murray special that week of like playing Yorion D&T with one Magus of the Moon.
Oh yeah. We both saw the tweet, raised our eyebrows, and then like showed up. And I think we were like 1 or 2 cards off from our like 95 card list or whatever.
Yeah.
And both proceeded to have a pretty reasonable / exciting time. You had that one game against this, whatever Trevor was on. It was like a 4 or 5 color cephalid breakfast deck. And I look over like round 3 or 4 and you've just got a Magus of the Moon in play and you've just locked him out. except he's got a batter skull that he can just keep returning, and you can't get rid of the batter skull. So it was just like a classic Jeff pile of shit game going on. And it just, I saw it, I admired it. I left for 10 minutes. I came back, and you're just sitting there still cool as a cat, just doing your thing, flickering. You got your Yorion with Caracas and an Aether Vial going, and you know, life is good.
Oh, but yeah.
It was classic.
I do feel compelled to note that the only difference between our decks too is that you had the correct list, which had Cathar Crusader, which I don't own. I need to get one. It's like 10 cents. But I was putting stuff together and I didn't have it. And I was like, what else am I going to do for this slot? And I was flipping through my my D&T binder. There's the box. Everyone knows the box. It's full of all the garbage. And the binder is like, you know, stuff gets upgraded to this small little, you know, 2x2 binder or whatever. And I had to go into my Goblins binder to get the Magus of the Moons because they aren't the red stuff. And I flipped past a card and it just called to me. Goblin Settler. Right sitting there in the book. And I thought, you know what? One of the best things you can do with Cathar Crusader is kill an Urza Saga. Do you know what else can kill an Urza Saga? A Goblin Settler. You hit that baby with a Flicker Wisp or a Yorion and you're in business. I only got to do it once and it was great. I had a game against Tristan where I think we had maybe like 3 minutes on the clock to finish round three or game three. And he goes like forest birds and I just swords it. And then he misses a few land drops and I just played a recruiter and got a settler and then just played a settler. Get out of here. Goblin Settler is so fucking good. Killing lands is like the best thing you can do in Magic.
Oh yeah. It's fantastic. Well, Rashad importing a land is the best.
Killing that's true, because they get to look at
land. Yeah. They have to still like participate and do things with the land, but it never really does anything.
If everyone's going to be in D&T again, I'm going to bring it to Fairy's response. Because there's nothing better than when your opponent's like, oh, I'll keep a Porter Island. And you're like, how will you? Like, you will that turn. But
I'm pretty sure that's when Jeff's boarded in his Pyroblast against you. And he Pyroblasts your freaking Teferi's response. Okay.
Also, Cathar's Crusader, not Commando, right?
Probably. I don't know.
It's like common, right? Like, Commando, how many packs do you have to open to get a particular common on average?
I have no idea.
I would have just busted packs till I found it. That's just me. I live different.
No, you would have traded in your wild cards for it. Because you're a scummy...
Oh, scummy please, arena online, player. Online I have a place of that for sure. Are you kidding me? Through one flash?
Yeah, I just asked Josun and he just came over and gave me one.
Yeah.
So probably do that. Awesome. So big news today.
Well, the big not news.
Well, I think it's news. It's like the Canadian election. Like something happened, but nothing happened. Right? Like... Kinda.
Yeah, cost us less than the election at least.
Bueller? Bueller?
I was trying to meme it when I was writing the show notes about saying like no ban November, but it doesn't have the same ring to it. If you're like online too much, you can be like, ha ha ha. And if you laughed at that, log off Twitter.
This is the month of monkey retention.
Yeah. You're held back from playing a blue deck that doesn't have a monkey in it.
Wait. Simeon retention?
Oh, wait. No ban November. Ian will not spank the monkey. We did it. Fucking did it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, in case somehow, I don't even know if it's actually possible, that one, you've listened this far, and two, you haven't heard of this somewhere else already, but WotC announced that they don't really have any ban intentions prior to Eternal Weekend. Personally, this is where this confirmed where I was kind of at with it, but I know a lot of people were really hoping for something. Maybe we can just kind of get some of the negativity juices flowing right now.
Should we read the thing just so everyone knows? We kind of alluded to it, but This is the tweet from the official Magic account. To address something we've seen from interested players, we don't plan to make any changes to the Legacy or Vintage BNR list prior to Eternal Weekend. We will be watching the event closely and look at potential changes afterward.
What do you think?
I think this is exactly in line with what happened last year. When we had, like, it was Snowco, Geddon, and we had Astrolabe everywhere, and there wasn't a lot of events happening, and they kind of used Eternal Weekend as that, I don't know, finger in the wind to say, like, we're going to have a couple thousand matches of Legacy played here. What are we going to get? And it's going to be competitive. People want to get these, their 18th copy of a printing of Wasteland. Like, they really want to see the cool art. And we've only had a couple high-end, like, actual showcase challenges. And again, you've even got, like, card availability issues. Like, Saga and all these Modern Horizons 2 cards cost a lot of... Jeff's giving me the finger wag.
Yep.
Go ahead,
finish,
Jeff.
Finish your point, and then I'll
well, I was going to say, like, there's potential, like, issues in terms of card availability. Legacy players, probably half the community, maybe might be interested in playing Ragavan, but they don't want to shell out $100 to play Ragavan. Like, that's one of the things that Jeremy brought up yesterday. Or not yesterday. Two thresholds ago. But it will be interesting to see what God accounts do, where everyone's just allowed to play what they want to play and what they can play at a high level of competition and see where the chips land, and then you can make some decisions afterwards. Now, so tear me apart.
Cards that are expensive are the ones that people are talking about banning. So if they're being held, if people are being held back by cost, one would assume there'd be more of it when there's God accounts, which is worse. Like, now let's, there's two things here. It's like, one, either they think the current state is okay and therefore they need more data, which I would disagree with, but I guess is like it's a take, you know, to be like, hey, the Saturday challenge that isn't a bad, whatever. Also, when people are like, sidebar, well, it's in a really, you know, like a, European players don't play a lot, and it's bad for Japan. Like, yeah, but it used to fire. Like, you have two data points. It used to fire. It's not firing. It doesn't, like, it's in a bad time. Like, yes, that's a separate problem that they could also adjust. But, like, it was firing. It's no longer firing. Hasn't fired for 7 weeks in a row.
I think it's because Popper is so good now that everyone's migrated to Popper.
You can play 60 lands and win.
This is also more satirical stuff based on Fairy Miscreant being bugged, right? Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. That's why Legacy isn't firing, is because Miscreant draws a card. It's a clear, like, the R squared is like 99. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
But, like,
continue.
What I'm saying is they have enough data and think things are fine, and they think this will change. In which case, you're point around, like, people can play whatever they want, and so if there's like this influx of like blue red decks, then they could be like, okay, it was like cost was like holding people back, it's worse than we thought, we'll do a ban. If it's like we don't have enough data, like, yes, there are like aren't as many premier events firing, but they have weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of data. Like, they have all the data. We have a limited set because, you know, some people have to go out of their way to collect it all on behalf of like Legacy people, but like, they have leagues, they have challenges, they have the showcase challenges, they can like slice and dice the data all they want. Like, they have the data. So either they just don't give a shit, or my conclusion is that they think everything's fine, which is like an opinion I disagree with, but at least that's something.
Yeah. What's interesting, like, when I go into the actual Legacy Challenge data that's coming out of Joe Dyer and the team's work, which, if you don't support them, go support them. When I go look at, like, the win percentage of these Ragavan decks, specifically Jeskai and Blue Red Delver, they're not actually that high. Like, half the time they're at 50. Well, no, for this is for the last four. So this includes a super qualifier and three challenges. So all of October stuff. Like half the time they're below 50%. There is only one event where it's actually like at all above 50%. So it's not like they're totally dominant. If you like, there's in terms of decks that are actually playing like 5% or more of the format, like green, white lands, elves, and a couple others like are actually putting up like much stronger win percentage. And if they were played a lot more, then things
I don't think that's true. If they're played a lot more, is the variable there, right?
No.
Delver and elves and other decks like that aren't like Reanimator, where you can be EW Landon, but you could be us and, you know, be in a match where you're supposed to kill each other and still stumble your way into a top eight. And then one of us coin flips another win in the top eight, right? That's just like the raw power of that deck. Even though there's like fail cases, you run hot, you get there.
Yeah, I think
Red Delver's way harder to play. And if a lot of people play that deck, the win percentage is going to come down because there's a lot of pilots who like don't know what they're doing, don't know Legacy format as well as other people. Versus the people who are playing elves, like no one just picks up elves and it's like showcase challenge, right? Like those are the best elves players.
Sure, and it's easier to be. I think we'd agree that it's easier to be a good blue red Delver pilot than like a random elves pilot or ant pilot or whatever. Like you could be like a good pilot in modern with blue red and be like, okay, like I've played Legacy before, but it was a couple of years ago. And you wouldn't be awful, like kind of rolling into Legacy. But I think using like the kind of, for lack of a better term, like the Brian Cook metric of the super qualifiers are the only thing that really matters, because that's when it's like really competitive. And all the challenges are just, you know, people who have time and have a calendar and aren't going to a baby shower and they have time to play. And the super qualifiers, that's where you got to look for the data. And if it's really bad there, then it's really bad. And that would give credence to your argument, Quinn, to say we had almost 30% blue red Delver, just straight pure as the driven snow blue red Delver. And it was a 55 match win percentage. So that would indicate that it's a dominant deck and worthy of consideration. But in all of the other instances where you just have Joe Schmoes showing up on your everyday, any given Sunday, the match win percentage and representation is lower and less good. But again, it goes back to your point of like, where are the true spikes, like the Daniel Gochel showing up, the Jarvis Hughes, and just actually showing up and be like, okay, I'm just going to win this event because I'm just going to play the best deck and it's just going to be fine. So at the end of the day, my concern is that we're going to see when we look at the data, Legacy data collections, beautiful data that they're going to get out of Eternal Weekend. I know they're doing a bunch of planning around that right now. If you have time, go and contribute. But when we look at that, we're going to see a similar chart to what we saw last year, which is two big bars at the top indicating like 40% or 45% of the metagame is playing these two decks. And then I think JR is going to write a lovely, Jason and JR are going to write a lovely primer on how to play Death and Taxes. And Death and Taxes is going to be number three. And then you'll have a bunch of other decks down below that. And it'll be like almost a carbon copy of what we saw last year.
Yeah, I think my question would just be like, why? Like, also, like, to go into things that aren't certainly not under Welty's control, but it's been like the shittiest 2 years in like pretty much everyone's lives, barring like personal tragedies I don't know about for some people we don't know, you know, like in general, if you took the right, average,
if you just
person,
took the collective sum, like,
this is the worst year and a half of your life. Like,
so far,
just fuck, why? Just like, we have like, no one can, well, people can travel somewhat now, starting to open up, but like no one's been able to play Magic for the longest time. They won't give us a big Legacy tournament. It's like the biggest thing possible, and it's like, well, it'll be like last year. It's like, great, and it'll be like Eternal Weekend before that, which at least we were in person. So like every time you queued up against like a fucking Ren and Six, you could be like, well, when this is all over, I'm gonna like queue into an old school side event and like draft Modern Masters and drink with my friends and meet people I only know online. And it was a lot more tolerable, but it's just still like the way they manage the tournaments. It's like, well, we'll see what happens after. It's like, no, people want to do these things. Like they want to go to and have fun. Like this we'll just wait till afterwards and then there won't be anything big for like who knows how long.
Yeah, this has been kind of my take on it too, is that like I appreciate that they're communicating at all, which, you know, is better than anything we get. But like this feels like kind of like the worst thing you can do, because I've seen a lot of people making like the card availability arguments, like you are, McBain, and those would hold like some water if they're also not doing God accounts. Like this is literally the time that card availability does not matter. And like, it's not even
before
like it's
a separate
thing.
Paper Eternal weekend, I was much more sympathetic to it for that reason.
Sure. If it's a paper tournament, that makes absolute sense, right? If it's like a month out from a big paper tournament and you totally rip up the format and people have to go buy cards, sell cards, whatever, like there's some merit in that discussion. But like when you're doing this in a digital format where as entry to the event, it's not even a separate thing you buy. When you buy entry to the event, you get a God account. Like this is the time to go buck fucking wild. Like imagine how dope this would be if they announced today there's these bans happening. And, you know, boom, everybody has a couple weeks to practice for Eternal Weekend and see where the meta shakes out. God accounts let people test out different things. You know, admittedly, they're not happening yet, but like in that time period, like that would be so fucking cool. Because like, what's the point of having the biggest online legacy tournament of the year with a cap on the end of it saying we're going to change the format after because nobody likes it?
Well, they might.
We that's might thing, right? But like in that, okay. Then if that's okay. The case, just don't acknowledge it, just don't say anything.
Okay, you got me. That's a great argument, I like it. So I was really kind of like appealing to like the analytical side of my brain where I'm like, well, you know, collect the data, you want to get a good sample, you want to make a decision. But Quinn, you're saying this is the pinnacle of legacy that's going to be played in the year. Let's make it a great one. Jeff, you're saying card availability is not going to be an issue. So if we shake it up, it's going to be great. You guys, I'm not going to say anything else on this. I think
there have been some great tournaments. So I don't want to take a lot of people in the community are running things. The vast majority of them seem to be as safe as they can possibly be right now. So I don't want to take anything away from that. But it's like by far going to be the biggest three tournaments of the year. Like,
well, and it's to be fair, it's a global thing, right? Like anyone, anywhere can participate. It's like maximum inclusion, which I think is another just great point for on your side of the fence, Quinn, about just saying like, let's make this great. And we're going to do that by like shaking things up so that enfranchised players who've just been grinding this for the last 2 or 3 months, they don't get an advantage or they get less of an advantage. And hey, people that have been sitting on the side and not really paying attention and waiting for something to happen, now's your chance. And it's not some crazy card availability thing where something's going to spike. So I'll shut up. Great argument. I think we covered it here.
I have one last thing that like, okay. If they're going to make the tournament shitty, it should have been because they were like, hey, we're like doing a preliminary unban on like Mana Drain for Eternal Weekend. Go wild.
Sheesh.
And then if like everyone's like, fucked, Mana Drain ruined the format, you know what? I would be 100%. I'd be like, man, the Mana Drain Wars of Eternal Weekend, that was sick. Thank God they tested it out online first. I didn't have to go buy 4 Mana Drains.
You know what they should do since the Saturday challenges aren't firing anyways? They should use the Saturday challenge time with a temp unban every week.
Like the Wild West time? That,
yeah.
We said this like a year ago that they should do this.
And the pandemic started, right?
Yeah, I still think it's a cool idea. It's just like, you know what? Wake up at 2 a.m. and, you know, like wipe the sleep from your eyes.
Yep, play some Italian magic.
Mana Drain yourself into a Karn into Mycosynth Lattice. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah, like it's not firing anyways, and they're saying they're not going to do anything about the format to make it fire. Just chuck the cap down to like 16 people, prizes can just, you know, fucking scale down, whatever, and just be like, all right, this week it Death Rate's unbanned. Next week, Ren and Six is unbanned, and just fucking see what happens.
What if they just what if they just didn't tell anyone and they just took the restrictions off?
Well, I mean, they just do that sometimes. That's like when people play fucking what was that Mox from the Unglued set that was legal in Vintage?
I have no idea what
you're talking about.
It sounds like something that could be happening.
There was a there's like a promo for like a I don't even know why it's on Magic Online. It's like an
Unglued. I wouldn't even find that out.
I don't remember. It was a big fucking deal. And then in classic WotC format, I think the notice came out and it's like, oh, we found out this is legal. If you use it, you'll be banned. Not like we're fixing it.
Don't do it now. So Eternal Weekend prep. We're 2 weeks out. We're going to the moon. We got to like prep here. Like we got to get our physical training, our mental training in. Jeff, like, how are you kind of preparing for this? I know you've really just been your feet up. You're sitting on the couch. You haven't really been engaged in Magic for the last like 4 years. Like you play a bit of Sealed here and there. Like, how are you kind of getting into this headspace? Is there any like primers or articles or things you're reading, or are you just following Jason Murray's Twitter feed?
So, you know, I got the bell, the dinger on for Jason Murray's Twitter feed. And if anything comes up there, get right on it right away. I just actually upped my rental limit because I could not rent enough stuff to play the Sagandi's deck list with the Urza Sagas and the Solitudes, because Solitude went up to like 80 tickets each and then Sagas at like 50. And like my rental thing is 300 tickets, which works out to like $7 a week, which is super fair. But now it's like you just put four Solitudes in and you're like, oh, fuck. So for a while, I was just playing regular D&T, trying to get some reps in. And then that was kind of fatiguing. I did have some brainwaves. I think so. I told you I've been watching some like Modern. And I was watching people play the Esper Sentinel. And I was like, Esper Sentinel is fucking cool. Like, what can I do with Esper Sentinel? I know there's like that blue white kind of humans lordy deck that was around for a bit that was playing Esper Sentinel. Didn't want to do that. And one of the decks in Modern was like a basically blue-white Stoneblade with Esper Sentinel. And I was thinking, yeah, that's fucking cool. Esper Sentinel plus Daze? Like, that sounds extremely cool. So I put a deck together. I just kind of peeped Jeskai Stoneblade deck from a while ago and, you know, cut some stuff here, trim some stuff there. Played a good like 10 creatures, which are Esper Sentinels, Stoneforge Mystics, and then like True Name and a Brazen Borrower. And I was like, I'm a genius. This is going to be so good. And I just slammed right into a league. I played all five matches of that league and I did not win a single game. Some of this, I think, is chalked up to, you know, just still being kind of bad at resolving multiple cantrips. Especially when you get like Expressive Iteration in there. The card's also fucked. But it didn't go well. You know, I just chucked some money in the Moto dumpster. So today, out of protest, I was like, I want to play Magic Online, but I don't want to expend the brain power to play Death and Taxes. So I just grabbed a Reanimator list and played two leagues of Reanimator. That deck, Fox. Also,
is this like the Archon of Cruelty, Sarah, yeah, whatever? And okay, two Greaves, pretty so, standard.
Yeah, I think it's like kind of a homogenized list at this point. Exactly those things you said, you know, the four color mana base and like silences in the board and, you know, wear tears, stuff like that, show and tells. I played the mirror like three times. I played against Dredge once. It was a fucking weird experience. I've never actually played the Reanimator mirror. And like, it's really strange. You just, and yeah, you hope you get a chance. I mean, you guys have experience with it. You hope you get Chancellor so you can like interrupt them a bit. And then it's like, okay, well, I don't have a fatty, but I have this card. So I'm going to hit them and then reanimate their thing. And it's like, oh, they kept the same hand I did. And now we're both just going draw, go with no cards in hand.
Oh, it's mutually assured destruction for sure.
Yeah. Like, I also didn't realize how many, like, until you really play with the deck, and especially some amount, like, I didn't realize quite how many bad hands there are. Like, you just draw seven, and you're like, oh, yeah, Dark Ritual, Reanimate, okay, okay. And then it's like, oh, I don't have an Entomb, or, like, I don't have a way to discard this thing. And it was, like, over half the hands was just, like, I don't even have, like, a turn two option. It's just my hands all reanimation, or my hands all discard.
I mean, if there wasn't, Grizzlebrand would be banned, right?
I mean, it's true. But it's just, it's so funny how different it feels when you're playing it versus when you're playing against it. But Archon is so good, and Emissary is just fucked.
Emissary is insane. When you just name lands or something, and you're like, nice crack, it's nerd. Like, it's just so, or nice Maze of It. Like, what are you doing with that thing?
I was playing against another reanimator player, like game one or something, and I just got it out. You know, I had the non-entomb hands, you have to discard it. And I just got it out, and I was like, wait, if I just name creatures, they just can't win. Like, they can put everything they want into play. Even if they put an Archon into play, I actually learned this today too. I thought Archon was each opponent. Archon is target opponent. So if you have protection from creatures, you cannot be targeted by Archon, and you will not lose your creature.
First Archon wins.
But like, if you have Sarah's Emissary, you're just like, yep, cool, nice Archon, came into play, did nothing, see ya. Yeah, it's fucked.
I'm definitely looking forward to playing that a bunch when the God accounts come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll probably put 4 Leyline of the Void in my sideboard, because, or even in the main deck, because it'll be so common.
Yeah. Like, I didn't think I was going to play 2 leagues today. But just rip through them, like, so fast.
Oh, I didn't think I could. Like, I played lands the other day. Mm-hmm. I ripped through them so fast because I just got steamrolled by all the combo decks on there. So I think the takeaway there, Jeff, is Jason Murray's Twitter and then maximum card hoarder amount, so that you can play whatever garbage Jason comes up with.
Crank it way up. And of note, with card hoarder, it's very easy to pause it once those god accounts come out.
And just a reminder for everyone, even though this is an electronic event, I played against Jason Murray at the last Paper Eternal weekend we went to. He called the judge on me for having old shitty sleeves. And it was during like a trial. And I got new sleeves. Thank you, Jason. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, make sure your sleeves are looking good and sharp, or else Jason Murray will call them on you.
And look at the lengths. Bob Wong.
Yeah.
Which and I, don't pull, unlike some things I've read on Twitter, I truly believe was an honest mistake for Bob. Sleeve variability.
Like, if you're even
two packs, even, look at them.
Julian actually shared this on one of his recent episodes, and it was uneven, not even like wear, but like shading and hue. Like, you know, like how you like don't use 15 cards of the sleeves that you get or whatever. He used some of those like from a friend or something, and there was just like uneven amounts. So like all like the Wastelands and Force Wills or something were like slightly off, and the judge could tell, and he's like,
Yuya Watanabe.
Yeah, he's like, I have no. So maybe don't go as far as Anurag and just re-sleeve religiously to the point where you probably have to have a little sleeve Sherpa who's just re-sleeving for you in between rounds. But maybe don't go that far, but like as Jason would call a judge on you for, get some new sleeves.
I like to do it the Thursday. I mean, Thursday for us, because that's our last like weekly, the weekly before a big tournament. So I have one weekly where I'm like, oh, they're very slippery. Holy shit.
A little bit of wear in them.
Yeah. Get a little bit of, you know, not sliding around when I'm trying to like cut.
I think that's endorsable for sure.
That's a good reminder. So McBain, what are you doing to prepare for this sacred holiday?
Trying to figure out if I'm crazy enough to play D&T in like a high level event or not. Like, I feel I have my clock management by playing lands down on MTGO pretty good, especially for all like the just like the dirtily stupid things with all the triggers. Like, I've got my Valakuts and my Sylvan Libraries and all that stuff. I can port like no tomorrow. I even do the whole like holding W when you're selecting. Ooh,
for the auto mana? Wow.
For the auto mana. And I know which lands will auto mana to the right autos. So I can really get some mana pumping when I'm playing lands, because that deck is brutal on the clock. So I feel like I could probably do the D&T, but I'm going to give it some rounds and just see how I feel.
We should again, do some like group call D&T beforehand, just go through some leagues or something.
Yeah. I've really been enjoying the kind of puzzles that Jason Murray's been putting up. I know this is just an appreciation podcast for Jason Murray right now. but the puzzles he's been putting up, and then kind of like answering some of the Q&A and stuff like that. And they're like interesting, tricky situations where he kind of like presents a specific situation where you want to get to, and what are you going to do about it and why? And it's just good mentoring to the community. But I haven't done very good on those lately. So I just don't know if I'm really kind of up to the caliber for just running into Eternal Weekend with D&T. So my fallback is playing lands. There have been some mono green lands being circulated around.
Ooh,
indeed. Yeah. So it's your classic like Urza Saga. So strip out the red, strip out your Punishing Fires and Valakut Explorations. You should be all on board for this, Jeff. But then you're adding in things like Crucible Worlds, you're main decking your Endurances. And then most importantly, you're adding in your Urza Sagas.
Crucible Saga is so fucking rude.
Yeah. So, and then the creme de la creme is that you're actually playing main deck Sphere of Resistance.
So you're just like a very slow stompy deck.
Oh yeah. You're kind of more like a stompy. Yeah, you're kind of like almost like instead of mono red stompy, you're like mono green dirtles. I don't know.
So yes.
Yes, but it's not really in that, like, it's more like stompy prison, in that it doesn't really stomp you, it just kind of like prisons you out. So you've still got the Tabernacles, you've got the Wastelands, you're not playing any Rishadan ports. You're up to three.
I'm out.
Three Ghost Quarters.
Kind of.
So so between the Loams and the Crucibles and the Sagas, you're just kind of going to grind your opponent into pulp.
You're like mono green power walking.
Whatever you need to come up with, Quinn, you can come up with it.
I do hear like mono green lands, and my mind just goes right to Alley and like spreading algae and Urborg.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So that's the sushi lands is not where we're going right now, but it is cool nonetheless. But anyway, so I haven't gotten four Urza Sagas. I've only got one. So I've been playing the one of my favorite fans of lands is Dull04, which is a Japanese player. Horihito. I'm forgetting his last name, but his style lands is my favorite. And I've been playing that online to some pretty reasonable results, but I'm interested to play the four Urza Saga lists and see how those feel. It's been pretty contentious in the Legacy community or in the lands community on like exactly where people land with the whole four Urza Saga thing, but getting to Thespian stage in Urza Saga.
Oh yeah.
Is pretty sweet. Like when you can just continue to pump out constructs ad nauseum, it's pretty fantastic.
I mean, Saga is just so individually powerful too. Like, I think JR was tweeting the other day that, you know, it's like keeping track of the amount of matches he's won with the least amount of spells cast. And it's like, you know, he played a Saga and like won a game.
Well, Lance has lots of those. You're like, exploration kill you.
Yeah.
Like, it just, you know, you get lots of those. But yeah, for D&T, like, the fact that it both creates pressure and allows you to get a vial into play and start just like deploying your spells while still disrupting your opponent is really powerful. So I don't know. I think Urza Saga is, in my opinion, here to stay in the format, and it will have its footprint on the format, and Urza Saga decks will just be a thing in Legacy from now on. I kind of like it because it provides an interesting subgame, and it also incentivizes games to like become a little bit more grindy and slowed down, and there's interesting answers to it, like Dress Down and like Meltdown. Anything that ends in down is pretty cool. And I don't know, I'm here for it.
I also like it. I was thinking the opposite.
Well, it sucks
that it makes games faster.
Hmm.
Like, it just gives this clock to decks that can like support, you know, four colorless lands in addition to whatever other colorless utility lands they're playing.
Saga sucks. It does too much.
Are you guys?
I think it's fine. I don't know.
So it dies to Wasteland. You have to, like, it presents deck building constraints. It like presents like both deck building constraints in terms of cards you put in it, but also like your mana base, because it dies at the end.
Yeah, but like the biggest deck playing it is fucking three colors. Like, it's not that hard to play a colorless land.
Yeah, but that deck has, I don't want to sound like Colin here, Brainstorm, which is not going away. I'm sorry, Colin.
Ponder, and it's got Ragavan.
Expressive, like, Iteration, Ragavan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, you know, like, and I know. And I think it is not on the chopping block compared to other stuff, but like, it does so much and it's so fucking annoying. Like, a land that produces two bodies and pulls out like a Retrofitter Foundry. Like, this is also part of like the angle.
Hey,
you die to the Retrofitter Foundry. Like, yeah. You don't even need the sagas. Like, that's no, just but gravy.
That is just gravy, but making two large colorless things, like, this is also just, you know, the small creature deck that experiences things differently. Part of it's kind of like when we're talking about Oko and, like, you know, people like McBain just didn't understand.
Oko, like, invalidated certain strategies, though, right? Like,
yeah, yes, I'm not saying it's blockers, it's the same as Oko, like, but it is like a thing that, you know, somewhat uniquely affects in this sense, like the smaller creature decks compared to the, you know, flying infects or the giant 2020s.
I certainly don't think it's a good design.
All right, I'll be.
But I think it's the kind of mistake that has a home in Legacy.
There, I think it's the kind of mistake that unfortunately sticks around in Legacy.
And you know what? D&T will remain.
It's not more egregious than Show and Tell.
Yeah, but I mean, you get such a pass because Show and Tell fucking rules and is old.
Like, I think if Ragavan was old, then we'd be like, we probably just wouldn't be playing Legacy anymore. You know, if like Oko was old, it'd be like, fuck, this card's still here. It sucks.
Dude, if Ragavan was old, it would like be reversed. It's a 1-mana 2/1. When you hit your opponent, they get the top card of your deck and the token.
But you know what I'm saying, right? Like, it's just like the gameplay is like, whatever. I mean, Show and Tell just ends the game, but you know, like, ends the game. You're like, great, I got Show and Tell. I don't know. If Saga was old, they'd be like, yeah, like, and they printed all these other like 0-mana artifacts. It might be like the days Brainstorm argument. We'd be talking about like, oh god, they printed Retrofitter Foundry, they have to ban it because Urza Saga exists.
Right. It's like the pod argument. It's like, well, we're always gonna keep printing better creatures, so we gotta ban pod.
Yeah. But what if they didn't keep printing better creatures? What if they stopped power creeping creatures?
The next magic set, zero creatures.
Okay, I'm gonna get us back on track.
Hold on. I gave up my arguments in favor of your ban arguments and what Eternal Weekend could have and should have been. Jeff, you're forever going to bury Urza Saga hate deep down inside of you.
I don't think that's fair.
I didn't agree to this.
Okay, fine.
What I'm going to do to get us back on track, though, is to say that as someone who loves jank and combo, I don't like to look at floors. I like to look at Magical Christmas lands. And I just want to say, McBain, if you play D&T and you play the same event as Jeff, then you might lose. And what's the worst that can happen if you lose? But what if you place higher? What if you place significantly higher? What if you top eight? Do I think you're going to top eight? No offense. No, because that's very difficult for any of us. But like, can you imagine if you top eight with D&T and Jeff goes like 0-3 drop? Oh. Truly devastating forever. Anyways, that's why I play Magic. So those kinds of feelings. So I'm just throwing that out there for you. Got to swing for the fences.
That's a great argument. That would convince me. Holy shit.
Like Jeff is going to show up with Infect now and he's going to top eight and it'll be the reverse. Well, it'll be like a loser leaves town match in WWE. I'm going to register lands and be like, whoa, wow. I'm not. I look at lands hands and I'm like, is this keep? I don't know.
You know, it's pretty safe for McGuinn if you do register lands because there's a guaranteed 0-3 drop.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's like, if it has exploration, I'm like, I guess I keep. That's pretty much how it goes, right?
So I think I kind of capped you off, McBain, but it sounded like you were maybe finishing. So should we pass the same question over to Quinn? And what are you going to be doing to prepare for any Eternal Weekend or the baby shower you're attending?
I don't know, man. I talked about
Omni. Omni
with McBain last week. Omni is so bad when your opponent's flipping your cantrips off the top or your counter spells. Omni sucks against Monkey.
I think the truth of at least where Magic Online is right now, and I'm curious if some of this is, you know, like kind of an actual response to where the meta is and it's good, or if it's just like a temperature check. But Monkey is like way on the downturn.
Yeah, I think it'll be different in a big tournament, though.
It's funny because I feel like in a big tournament, you'd end up with all the people that consistently play Magic Online kind of continuing to do what they're doing and not play Monkey, but you have all these people coming in that, you know, don't play Magic Online and only here for the God accounts, and they're probably going to play Monkey.
I don't know. Like, if, like, JPA registered for the last challenge, he played Omni and, like, 1-3 dropped. And I don't know what happened. He may have gotten unlucky, but he certainly plays Omni better than I play Omni. And he was just kind of like, that was miserable.
But if he plays,
I would expect that he'll play the last deck he top aided with, which was not Sneak and Show, another blue-red deck, though. You can guess what it is. Like, I think the people who are a little spikier will play decks that they think are the best deck, right? I think
JPA, you play Omni and you place higher than him.
Unless, I don't think he's going to play that.
Then you definitely play higher than him.
I think JPA will most certainly play Blue Red Delver. I think that's what he played in the last big event. But I've got all the legacy data collection results open for all of October. And upon review, Show and Tell and Omni are basically in the dumpster. They put up awful results, sometimes not even played. But it's just like consistent across an entire month and a super showcase that it's just an awful choice.
Well, especially in Omnitel, like at least in Sneak and Show, like they could flip Sneak Attack, which like that's not good either. There's like you play Omni and you're like, what are they flipping? A card they're gonna play that gets them ahead, or they flip Show and Tell, or Omniscience, or Emrakul, or Grizzlebrand. The only thing they can flip lands, which you don't. That's like less than a third of your deck, slightly.
So where are we at? Where are we at then, Quinn? What are you doing? How are you preparing?
Honestly, I'm going to test the week before. I'm going to play decks that I think I'm going to enjoy playing for 10 hours. I guess maybe 10 hours is optimistic for like 5 hours plus. And if I don't have fun, I'm just not going to play. To be honest.
Okay, similar to the homework that we assigned you, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's like come up with some potential decks for Quinn.
I'm gonna jam Curses. I'll probably jam a little Reanimator. I'll play Tess just because I want to play Tess with the God accounts, not because I can play that in like a seven round tournament and actually like keep my brain from falling apart.
Madness.
Like the
anger.
Yeah, burning angry.
Even when I said Reanimator, I'm like, now when I'm thinking about the big term, like, I don't actually like playing Reanimator for that long. Whenever I've done that, I've like top eighted and be like, oh, I top eighted. That was so fun. And then I'll look back and I'll be like, did I have fun? Like, I had fun because I was winning. I didn't have fun and my opponents didn't have fun. No one had fun today. Except I got credit. Credit's the last fun. Time it happened, I bought an LED and I was like, well, that was great. I bought an LED. And then I was like, how much do I make an hour now that I'm a full grown adult? Could I have just like worked and bought an LED?
That's never the metric you should use.
Yeah, you're putting in your work.
It is. If I had fun, it'd be different. That's what I'm saying.
What about the like 8 thought cast?
Oh, yeah. I'll probably test that out.
I thought you wanted to have fun.
Pardon me?
I thought you wanted to have fun.
The 8 thought cast deck? Yeah, I don't like. Apparently, the sequencing is interesting. That's what I read online.
From what I've played from it, it really feels like a fucking candy for dinner.
You get to draw a lot of cards. Yeah, I like drawing cards.
I always love that phrase, candy for dinner.
Yeah, I don't know. The decks I like playing aren't going to be very good.
So any good infect tech?
Don't play it.
Maybe there's like be something zero infect
in the new set.
Even like Sam Dams was on Leaving Legacy, which you should listen to. He was great. I'm actually kind of disappointed that I wasn't like, wait, we could just ask him. I bet he might come on now. We have enough episodes. And like, but we didn't, and they did, and it was a great episode. But he was even like, yo, actually, yeah, I wouldn't even recommend that someone tries Infect now. It's very difficult. Perfect.
They'll never see it coming.
Yeah. They'll never see it coming. And then I'll go like turn one Glistener off and they'll be like, oh, great.
It's so just kind of putting it on a positive, and Painter would be another one to try out, Quinn. If you haven't listened to the Everyday Eternal, they have Callum and the other guy on, some other Painter player on, and they do a pretty good discussion on Painter. So I would check that out. But
I will definitely play some Painter for sure.
I think on like a positive note, like if you don't have someone that you're like explicitly like, I am of the JR and Jason Murray Church of D&D, and I'm going to play this, and I'm going to like spend my whole week playtesting this, and I'm going to do this. Like, you get to have fun. You get to just go do whatever you want.
Oh,
and just,
I'm excited like, for
sample
God
the
account.
Buffet. So
yeah,
I think that's a positive. Like.
No, I'm very happy there's God of Cancer are back. I'm definitely going to take advantage of that. I just like might not play the main.
I think you should come up with a bunch of decks that you like and then just like roll the dice and be like, this one I'm going to play on Friday and just go for it.
I don't know. I think like you play a league and you're like, at least I'm like, you know, I'll like set a budget for the week that there's God accounts. And if I lose, it's kind of like gambling. If I lose every single, like I don't come out even on like any league, I'll be like, great. I just like spent my budget. And like, that's fine. That's like entertainment. If you like enter a big tournament, like I'm blocking off that whole night. I could be like, hey, Liz, like we could do something after if I scrub out, you know, which for her is like, well, I'm going to find something else to do, which is very fair. You know, like if I don't think it's going to be like a good time, I'd just rather like go do something else. I don't know.
That is the biggest Chad move of all time.
Yeah.
Like just Giga Chad. Not Chad move like we might say locally. I mean like internet Chad move. I don't like this. Not going to do
Not going to play it. I don't know. I am going to play a lot during the week. And Jeff, I think, will I don't want to make a promise to people, but I'm going to make a promise to people that at some point we'll jam something totally nonsensical, you know, and stream it.
Yes.
At some point you have to do green white depths and like copy the Dark Depths properly, just to like redeem yourself.
Prove it can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the pre-show discussions too, we'll have to put some Song of the Dryads in there.
Ooh. Imagine that just being your deck is like four Song of the Dryads with like Argothian Enchantress and Thespian Stage.
Oh yeah.
Is that a good Enchantress? That sounds so fun. Enchantress seems really boring.
Hey,
Enchantress, I think it's just another... Jeremy on too. With apologies, Jeremy. I just like, I don't know, I look at them like, what's happening?
It's another candy for dinner deck.
Oh, you're just drawing so many cards.
It's you do get to draw a lot of cards.
Okay. So I think we're all excited for Eternal Weekend. We're looking forward to it. We've all kind of in some way scheduled some time in our lives to play in this event, as well as go to a baby shower. And we'll talk about Vintage some other time. But Quinn, I'm just checking out our show notes here, and it looks like you have this like new section. What is this?
I feel like, and this is a rare time where we have like a little bit of extra time. I want to introduce a segment called Let's Remember a Card. And I know there's like very little sports fan crossover in Magic, probably more so in the States, because like football and baseball are more like,
I mean, you've listened to the dead format, right?
Normal people do. Yeah. Well, dead format. Leaving a legacy, they're split, you know? But I don't know. Sometimes I'll like talk about like something happening with like Magic people, and they'll be like, I don't know what you're talking about, which is like fine, you know, like it's the same thing when I talk about like if I talk about Magic with other people I know, they're like, what are you talking about?
Right. Your tweets before you podcasted, I was like, who are these characters?
Yeah, you're like, what does this mean?
Well, what fantasy series is this from?
Yeah, what the fuck's he talking about? and it was hockey. But for any sports fan overlap, this is not about sports, but is a ripoff directly of the Defectors podcast, which if you are a sports fan, you should listen to, formerly Deadspin, called Let's Remember a Guy. Well, they will just, you know, they're not going to be like, I'm trying to think of the Magic equivalent. They wouldn't be like, let's remember Michael Jordan. So they wouldn't be like, hey, let's remember Mox Ruby.
Death Ray Charmin.
Like, yeah, it's Mox Ruby. Yes, very good card. Makes one red. Greatest cards of all time. It's more like, you know,
introduce your card. Like, use this as the moment here.
Let's remember Krosan Grip. Do you guys remember Krosan? I know you remember Krosan Grip, but do you guys remember playing with? I tried to pick a card that was when Jeff and I were both like relatively new to Legacy, and obviously McBain, you were playing, you know? So I thought about going back further, and then I was like, no. Let's remember a card we all actually remember playing or playing against very regularly. Krosan Grip.
I have like just things I want to say about Krosan Grip, but I feel like I have to give it up to give the podium and the microphone to Mr. Krosan Grip himself.
Are you talking to me? Or you
yes, sir.
We recently saw that card resolve at a Thursday. Is that where it came from?
That was a Goblin Settler situation though, right?
No.
Yeah. Determined.
Who's the other lands player that's
yeah, that was on Thursday. Wasn't it just he didn't have Force of Figures?
Yeah, he like just didn't have one.
And Goblin Settler situation. Didn't have the card.
Yeah.
Okay, the Goblin Settler.
Yeah, so like his opponent resolves like Omniscience or something like that. And he has like a sphere in place so that like he can't just go off. The guy's just like Krosan Grip your thing. And the Omni player is like sitting there with like all the counters and all this stuff. And it's just like, huh, I guess that resolves. I just looked at him and I was like, sir, do you just not have the Force of Vigors? He's like, yeah, that's correct. But meanwhile, Akash, who has been absent for all of the pandemics, came back for the first paper tournament. He played as mono green pile of crap that just crushes all of us. And he had the Krosan Grips as well in there. And he like purposefully was just like, oh yeah, no, Krosan Grip like solves some problems. And even in that, at the invitational that we had a few weeks ago. He had Crows and Grip in his winning list there. Like sometimes your opponents are just like, I'm all in on this thing. And you're like, get it out of here. See you later. It's like that split second edict effect that exists now.
I picked Crows and Grip because like when I started Legacy, I guess shortly after I started, the Delve cards got banned. And then it was like Miracles time. And so you just, if you could splash green, you're packing Crows and Grips. Which was like, also, I think like 80% of the time I flinch when someone plays a split second card. Crows and Grip and Sudden Shock back in the day. Obviously, there's like different, like as you mentioned, Sudden Edict now. But it's like Crows and Grip on the Inkmoth Nexus. I always have the Force of Will. Do I ever have the Force of Will when they just play Naturalize? No. But like someone plays a Crows and Grip and I'm like,
oh yeah, yeah,
it's good.
I was trying to make some recall joke on like airbags or something like that, but the airbags are fully functioning on the Crows and Grip split second, like oh, lurch yeah. forward. I actually even went back and pulled up some of like the very first Legacy GP top eights. The very first one in 2005, Crows and Grip didn't exist, but the threshold list in the top eight had Naturalize in the sideboard. So like we've always kind of been wanting this effect. And then the Eva Green list in 2009 had Seal of Primordium, which is like the enchantment seal version of the Naturalize effect. Oh, yeah. And then the moment Crows and Grip is legal, it's in the top eight list. Grand Prix Madrid 2010. There's a Progenitus Bant deck that's got some Crows and Grips in there. And
I also played Seal of Primordium in the top era.
That's awesome.
Seal's so cool. I mean, Crows and Grips so cool too. And the main thing I was even going to say too is exactly what you touched on, Quinn and McBain. It's one of the few cards that gets that. I'm just going to. Nope. Oh shit. And like I have so many memories of just watching you, McBain, like just the perfect, you know, little like rapier thrust of Crows and Grip through the middle of the armor. Like, oh man.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. And especially when you can like extract additional information from a split second card where like, oh, I wonder if I got this. Like, okay, well, this is going to inform my next play, but I still need to make this play right now. And you kind of dress it up a bit like, oh, I guess I'll maybe try and do this. And your opponent's like, ha ha, I have the thing. And you're like, I guess you maybe sort of can't do that actually, because it's split second. Like, it's pretty beautiful. And it's one of those things that's like, there's the naturalized disenchant effect of like, It was in alpha, like disenchant, just one white, one colorless, like perfectly costed thing. And just for one more, like fire policy would give it like draw a card or whatever, but split second. Oof. So good.
This is like, it would be a bad beat story, except I was never mad when it happened because it's just so fucking funny. Is when you would Crows and Grip someone's top and they'd be like, trigger counterbalance. And it'd be like Entreat the Angels, and you're like, you got me. You got me. Like, there's no way you did that on purpose. That's just okay. You got me.
So Dylan's probably already smiling at this point.
Thinking he's done but that at a certain time.
Oh no, there would be certain times where I would just like, because for some reason Dylan's just really predictable in my mind. Like I can really read him like a book sometimes. Ooh. And there'll be times where I'm like, okay, yeah, go ahead. That's fine. And then he draws his card and I'm like lean forward and I put my hand on his deck and I'll be like, okay, in your draw step I have an effect. Now that you've drawn your card for the turn, that you've like, now that you've drawn your Entreat the Angels, now I'm gonna Crows and Grip your sensei's top or your counterbalance or whatever it is. But like he's been like floating his three on there and he goes to like draw his card and you're like, oh, shields are down, now I got you. And Those are always really fun and very satisfying when you like next level someone on the Crows and Grip counterbalance. But
it's just so good. And it's fun how there's something that like intrinsically through just the words on the card, like shuts down play. There's also just the amount of play it creates, like you're talking about when you use it and those kind of next level things of hitting that top in the draw step or whatever.
It's an interesting card because I kind of think Split Second sort of sucks. Also, like, can't be countered. I'm like, eh. Like, maybe, I guess they need to exist. Like, Sudden Edict? Mm-hmm. I don't want to say Sudden Shot because I was a bias, but, like, Sudden Edict, I'm like, was that really necessary? Whereas, I don't know, when I think of Crow Sand Grip, I'm like, oh, man. So, like, people get me, like, people when someone gets you with a Crow Sand Grip.
I think, like, the narrowness of it. Works a lot for it. Yeah.
And I think the component of like, you know, it's a thing and it's just like, well, I have to like maneuver around this. I can't do some on the stack thing. I need to actually like play to the board and affect and move around it in another way. I think that's like another aspect to it. Whereas if it's just a disenchant and you're like, okay, well, I can just respond to the thing and then do my thing and it's fine, whatever. I don't have to really respect your card. Whereas the Crows and Grip actually kind of introduces this different element where they can't just respond to whatever you're doing.
I wish Sudden Edict had existed when more people still played Dryad Arbor. Then it's this kind of same kind of thing. You set up these weird, like I'm not going to activate Ink Moth Nexus, like end of turn fetch. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Get Dryad Arbor. And you just look at your opponent and be like, oh yeah, I know what's happening. You got one card in hand and it's a Sudden Edict.
Oh man, I was just going back to the Jarvis Yu winning GP 2015 lands list. Definitely four Crows and Grip hanging out in the sideboard there. It was like a staple. It was always like at least three Crows and Grip and always four Sphere of Resistance. It was like your combo matchup and your control, like mid-range matchup covered. But yeah. Whenever I started learning lands, it was just whenever you went to sideboard, you're like, well, there's always going to be some kind of artifact or enchantment that I'm going to have to deal with. So you just bring in your Crows and Grips and it just deals with it. It just solves that problem. But now you've got this crazy overpowered force of vigor.
I remember this is probably the most distinct like Crows and Grip memory that I have. It's nothing even really to do with Crows and Grip. It's just standing at Mock's boarding house, watching you play lands against some blue deck. And I think it was like, you know, game three. And you're pretty deep in the game. You have a billion lands in play. And I don't think they had much going on, but they have a back to basics. And I'm watching you, and you have this Crows and Grip in your hand. And you have the mana available to get rid of this back to basics. But instead, just every turn, you're like porting like one of their lands and then like using your stages to like copy things to make more ports, even though they get locked down under back to basics. Just like you got the safety valve whenever you need it. But until then, it's like you think you're going to affect my lands.
Yeah, I remember that matchup actually. It was, I can remember the guy's face. He was like this younger, really eager guy who just like thought he was hot shit. But yeah, he just like threw down the back to basics, but then it locked out, like it was less favorable for him. And I was like, okay, well, I can just keep going here. And I just kind of like continued to develop my board advantage to the point where like you can set up those turns where you port their like one remaining white source. You're like, okay, shields are down now, you're just dead. And you're back to basics. Yeah, like you're going to draw more job. Lands.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just using Rashad and Portman as a back to basics in play is like...
Oh, yeah. Like, you were signaling intention there. You're like, sir, I'm tapping that. Like, it's the best. Like, I love, like, tapping a Krakus when your opponent's like, you're like, okay, I'm going to tap that. And I lose my... You're basically, like, wastelanding at that point. You're like, okay, I'm going to wasteland your Krakus for my port. And it just kind of goes off to the side. And I remember like, I've had a number of games where you just have this pile, like, you know, 9 or 10 lands just kind of off to the side in this big stack. And it just never ends happening. But like, yeah, that one where like I had the Crozen Grip and it's like, you know, I can do this if I need to, but it'll probably get him out of this situation more than it will get me out. Yeah. Crozen Grip, fun times.
So other than Crozen Grip being gas, let's move on and talk about some other things that are gas. Jeff, you want to start us off?
Sure. I wanted to shout out my this is an honest answer. My oldest friend, Matt Abney, who listens to segments of the podcast, mostly when I'm making a song. I'll bounce my Bare Naked Ladies lyrics off of him and he'll give me ideas. Also notable, looking on the outside in at Infect and always thinking about it when in-store play was around and we used proxies. There's been a lot of stuff going on in life in the last couple of years, and certainly frequently, like right now for each of us. And it's been nice to have somebody to consistently, you know, fall back to and talk about whatever. And it's especially nice to have had that over 15, 16 years or something. So I'm going to send him this and he's going to have to listen to the whole episode now. But Matt is gas.
I mean, we got timestamps, so he could fast forward to it. McVeigh.
Well, kind of on this note, I can't believe you didn't come to Dune the other night, Jeff.
Yeah, you know, the dog situation. Yeah,
life things come up, didn't he?
Yeah, I know.
Real life stuff.
Well, like Matt, you know, Matt was there, and I was just making some small talk with him at the beginning of the show. We actually sat together. It was a very intimate moment. I was listening to the audiobook of Dune. I haven't read the whole thing, yada, yada. And he kind of leans in. He's just like, yeah, I've read it like 6 times and I've read all the things. And like, just like, it was, he was a fan. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of looked at him and was like, so this is like a pretty important moment in your life here. Like, you're getting to see this. He said, I'm very excited. And you could see in his eyes, it was like Santa Claus, like twinkling eye on Christmas or something. He was just like super stoked.
That was the most upsetting part of it, not going to go to the movie. It's not even about not going to like see it. It's like Matt, in one respect or another, over the amount of time I've known him, has been like, I know he's a fan of the book. And, you know, there's always some little like, hey, read the book. Never like, hey, watch the movie from the 80s, but like, read the book. And then the movie's coming out and it's like, yo, we're going to go see this movie. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to see it and I'm going to know exactly what the Bene Gesserit is.
Bene Gesserit, you fool. Dune is gas. I saw it sitting beside Matt, and then I went a few days later with Lissa and we watched it, and it was sweet. It was gas. Loved it. Great movie. And if you haven't seen it, or you're a little bit hesitant on, you know, going out to the theaters or whatever, this is definitely a movie that I would recommend seeing in the theater, and get out there and see it. And this recommendation will be standing by the time this show gets out, in whatever, how many days it takes us to get this out. So you'll be able to actually do this one, but doing this gas, go check it out. For Matt's sake, at least.
Support Canadian media.
Yeah.
Wait,
Gwen, how about you?
No, Dennis Villeneuve is from Quebec.
Oh, yeah.
Oui, oui.
My last guest is local player Jin. I don't know Jin's last name, but also maybe he doesn't want to have his last name on the internet. So that's great. Since we've got back to paper, I mean, he was kind of before paper, you know, occasionally, but since we got back to paper, he's been there most weeks. Because we are in a atypical paper meta, he's been playing Ant, which is pretty horrendous online, but it's like fine enough in paper. And we had just like an incredibly, I was like, stupid in the best way match where we played Ant versus Omni, and McBain, who I am usually the one ribbing about, you know, taking too long in the round, came and went, how are you guys the last match? And we both have these massive graveyards. We are like on like turn 15 or something. I had top decked like Force of Wills that I later hard casted to keep him from going off. And then I draw the Eureka that I recently bought and was like, ponder, play my ponder. And I'm like, I need to ponder something. I can find a place for Eureka. And I ponder to an Emrakul and I play the Emrakul. And Jin has a Passing Flames kill in his graveyard. He just needs a red source. So for some reason, we've drawn a million cards and he's never drawn something he can fetch a Volcanic Island. And so he just looks to me and goes, are you ready? And I'm like, yeah, buddy. And he flips the card of his library and goes, oh, I'm dead. And I'm like, no. That's a tutor. And he's like, I can't. I'm like, you're hellbent after you play the tutor. We had this like big talk about like, no. You get a tutor for a Lotus Petal. And he's like, or a Volcanic Island. And he's like, oh, yeah. And that is the most fun I've been had being killed by Passing Flames in a long time. But in general, just I think that story is also an example of just a really like someone who comes to play Magic and have fun playing Magic. Obviously, like all of us likes to win games, but just a really enjoyable person to play. And that's what really makes the local community and paper Magic so great. So Jin is gas. Where can people find you guys? Jeff.
I'm on Twitter at JeffDKK.
Ooh, this is a reversal because you were like, you had to think, you get kind of paused. You didn't really know what's going on. So I'll just let everyone know that I am at on Twitter at Quinomori. You can find us all on Twitter at Canadian Thresh or on our SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/thecanadianthreshold. Email us if you want to at thecanadianthreshold@gmail.com. And then McBain, where can people find you if they wanted to?
I was just waiting for you to like end the show. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. It's fine. I didn't want to say anything anyway. You can find me at Servant Painter on Twitter.
Can't get him. He's unflappable now.
Yeah.
And he'll remain unflappable for the next two thresholds. And we'll see you all after that. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Tombstalker.